Welcome to The Culture of Leadership. We have conversations that help you develop and become a more confident leader. This is my conversation with Jem Burrough. Jem is 24 years old and a serial entrepreneur from Germany. With his Google Ads agency, Adcubator, Jem and his team have spent more than $318 million profitably. He's now building his own e-commerce brands and acquiring other marketing agencies. He's leading a team of 103 people currently, and it's growing rapidly. Along the way, he's learned many leadership lessons that have helped him. Today, Jem will share his five leadership lessons that helped him scale his businesses. To start the conversation, I couldn't help but ask him why he thought people should listen to what he has to share. This is the Culture of Leadership podcast. I'm Brendan Rogers. Sit back and enjoy my conversation with Jem.
Well, first of all, the reason why people should probably listen to me is we've not only built a team of more than 103 people, around 103 people, which is full-time people working in-house and not contractors, but we've also built, you know, this is like across several companies, so across agencies, across our e-commerce businesses, and that is not only remote, but also in-house. So for my Google Ads agency, Adcubator, for example, we have an in-house office with 23 people. For the other agency, Accelerator, we have an in-house office with around 8 people in Hamburg. So we know exactly that there can be a huge, vast discrepancy between building the culture in-house and building the culture if people are not in an office or working remotely, right? And especially if you have people working in-house and outside of the office, then it's like, okay, how do I really combine both of these things to have a team that is not only, you know, getting along with each other, but that is working productively, having a proper output, and not having to babysit all these people, right? And if we're taking a look at the track record that we're having, the revenue that we've did last year was around 35 million across all the companies. So I think it's not like we're doing some guesswork here and trying to figure it out. I think we're doing good. Every year we're seeing significant growth in our business. So I think it's a valid reason why people should listen to this.
Yeah, mate. There's a bit of credibility there, absolutely. What's given you the drive to build these companies? What drives Jem?
In the beginning, quite honestly, was just money, in it to make money, you know? I remember there was a quote in my yearbook when I was 18. Because there was a question, where do you see yourself in 10 years, right? And I just wrote down millionaire. You know, I didn't try to be funny, but I was genuinely thinking that, okay, I'll be a millionaire. Because I thought, okay, you manifest it, become what you think you are. It actually happened 3 years later. But of course, I think many, many things start with money. Because if you grow up not having money and you see all these other people and kids have money, you know, money is not a bad thing. You can do nice things in life with money. You know, you can do vacation, you can eat at a restaurant. Generally speaking, money just increases the quality of life that you have and just gives you a lot of security, right? But at some point, it's not about money. It's about making an impact. It's about leaving a legacy. It's kind of like a game, right? That you want to become the best in your respective vertical and just crush all of your friends and all the other people that are there and just try to become the best player. Right? It's kind of like we're playing Monopoly and you have four people playing it. Like, you're not playing to lose, right? You're playing to have fun and you're playing to win, what kind of gives you joy as well. So that's what it's all about. I mean, I've started doing these keynotes last year. My first one was actually in Dubai in February last year, which was in front of, I think, 120, 150 people, which is Geek Out, Geek X now called, the event of a friend of mine, where the average brand or the average attendee makes 37 million in revenue a year, which is humongous, right? So imagine this 23-year-old guy speaking in front of all these people for a first keynote, and then 3 months later being invited to the biggest marketing conference in Europe with 70,000 attendees in person speaking in front of a crowd of 10,000 people. So this is kind of like the pace that we're going at. And I think it's beautiful because, of course, it starts with money. But at some point, you're getting to see the impact that you have, especially because I used to have an info product business and education company where we were teaching people how to make money online, how to start their own e-commerce business. And the results that we've seen from the people that are enrolled in the course are just crazy because they come into the course not knowing anything about mindset, not knowing anything about you know, how to run ads, not knowing anything about e-commerce. And then, you know, they go through the guidance, they go through the course, they go through the materials, they attend the calls, they ask the right questions. And then you kind of like see them progressing, kind of like a chart that is always compounding and compounding and compounding. And I think that's super interesting.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you remember the time that it changed for you from being about money to actually being a leader and having an impact? What was that pivotal moment?
I mean, first of all, you know, everything that you're doing that involves money is, you have to be the guy who does the fulfillment. You have to be the guy who does the sales. You're a one-man army. And as soon as you're starting to hire people, it's like, okay, well, I need to provide for them. I need to provide for their families. I can't let the ship sink. So, you know, if you're sinking your own ship, that's one thing. But being responsible for a lot of other lives, you're starting to realize that's something else. Because the people are putting their trust in me. They wouldn't come to me or any of my companies and say, hey, I want to work for you, right? Like, they wouldn't apply if they wouldn't feel something about it. Because people don't apply because of only salary or some kind of benefits, or, you know, startups having a table tennis table in their office, or some, you know, free supplements, whatever. And I think the change really happened in 2020 when we started to hire more and more and more people and actually get an office. So that's where we're like, damn, it's kind of becoming a big thing. These are real people. These are not only people in front of the computer, but yeah, we have to turn this into something big, which is what we did. So it really started snowballing from kind of like going from one man army, kind of freelancer, if you will say so, hiring a few people, you know, friends, just people in your circle, into hiring external people that you've never known that come into your office for an interview, where it's like, okay, well, we're kind of breaking the barrier here.
And 103 people later, mate, you're having quite an impact, absolutely. So let's dive into Jem's top five leadership lessons and tips over this journey you've had so far and rising up the ranks very, very quickly. The first one, mate, not relying on IQ, but also EQ. Explain it.
I think to be a good leader, because I mean, of course, running a business, you can run a business if your EQ is that high or is just average. But in order to lead people and understand and get feedback, and, you know, assuming that the things that you understand immediately as a leader is I'm immediately picked up by your team is not a given, right? So I think, because of course you've been your business for the longest amount of time. So how can I really communicate with my team in a way that they don't feel any negative form of communication from my end or a C-level end, where it's like they feel inclined to leave because there's someone else on the team that is kind of like holding it all together, you know, who has more of an EQ, who is a team leader, for example. This is why it's so important in a leading position, in a team lead position, in a C-level position, or even as a founder, depending on how, of course, the organizational chart is, to have some kind of high EQ, because otherwise you don't understand what the people are thinking. You don't understand what the people are feeling. You don't understand how to act in certain situations. And it's pretty much it, honestly.
How do you think you've developed your own level of EQ over the time that you've been scaling businesses?
It's a good question. I think the main thing I did to develop kind of a high EQ is not only read a lot of books, but also talk to a lot of people and people all around the world. Traveling is something I could never really afford until, you know, start to make money, of course. And then I started traveling a lot. In 2020, I've been to 10 countries. Last year, I've been to 15 countries. Last year, I've had more than 50 flights, which sounds kind of nice. It was honestly very draining and I would never do it again as much. But you get to meet people all over the world, right? Especially if we're talking about marketing and e-commerce. You're in this vertical where, of course, there are people in Germany doing e-com and marketing. But the bubble back then, 2017, 2018, when I started, wasn't as big as it is right now, right? So you have to go out of your comfort zone and talk to people, and like, in order to just make these significant connections and make sure that you are exchanging your knowledge with other people, right? Whether that is through some kind of community, some kind of forum, some kind of group, some kind of masterminds, some kind of events, or whatever it is. And this is how you really get to start to talk to people. And I think, of course, by nature, you have some kind of IQ level, EQ level, but of course, there's ways on how you can improve it. And this is like one way, for example, just talk to a lot of people, just make sure that you study social dynamics in a way that you understand what is appropriate to say in what situation and what is not appropriate to say in another situation. It's super interesting to see when people go to a party, for example, or let's say you would be going to a party and you would know one person and there are 100 people. You would know one person that said, the way you are integrating yourself into the party is a super interesting way to see if you have some kind of EQ. There's actually a super funny story. We were at an event, like a goodbye party for a friend of mine. And there was this woman, and she's actually in Dubai right now, which is kind of funny. There was this woman, you know, we were in our circle just talking and just having a chat. And then no one knew her. And, you know, she just started introducing herself. And then some other people came or like turned around who weren't part of the conversation. And then she said, oh yeah, we were just introducing and exchanging names. Kind of like so smooth that it's not awkward, but it's very genuine and has a very, very good flow of the conversation. So it doesn't go off track, or it's this weird introductory thing where you're like, oh, I don't really want to meet this person, but it's super smooth because no one feels that they have to go out of their comfort zone because she just seems so genuine and so nice, you know? So this was like one moment where I was like, man, this woman's super high EQ.
Yeah, great story. Great story to reinforce the message about it's not just IQ, it's EQ, a key part of leadership. Let's go on to the second point, mate. You mentioned to me feedback culture is critical. Tell us a bit more about that.
I think it kind of revolves a bit to the first point, because if there's some miscommunication, which is always going to happen, or some misunderstanding, it's about how do I communicate that, well, back to the person who said it or back to the user who received it, right? So within this feedback culture, of course, we could talk about operations here and see that there is a problem within a certain, you know, structure or process or whatever. But this is more so about if shit goes down, if there's something wrong, how do I make sure that this feedback is reinforced to the user or the sender directly without having a negative connotation, but you know, because you can send a message in two ways. You can have a positive connotation, you can have a negative connotation, right? You could say, for example, hey, if we're talking about a super, super simple real life example, I'm thirsty, bring me water. What kind of have a negative connotation? I didn't say please, I didn't say thanks. And I said, I'm thirsty, go do it for me, right? It's not really a polite way of saying things. However, if I were to say, man, are you as thirsty as I am? You're kind of close to the fridge. Would you mind bringing me some water if you're already there? It's kind of like a totally different thing, right? It's not the best example, but it's something that I just came up from top of my head. But it totally reinforces the message in a totally different way that it doesn't seem rude, but it just seems very polite, right? So I think this is why feedback culture is so incredibly important. Because again, you can send messages in two ways, and, especially if you're trying to send a message that has a positive enforcement, but you know, you might have used the wrong word. It might have come out in a different way, which is a bit negative, but you don't know for a fact, right? So this is why it's important to always talk to each other. I mean, this is what keeps people in marriages, right? Talking with each other. So feedback culture is super important.
Yeah. Once again, I couldn't agree more. And guess what I'm hearing you say is that ability to have the emotional intelligence, that level of connection and rapport building, whatever you want to call it, the first point you referred to, that definitely underpins and supports the ability to create a really good feedback culture. Would that be fair to say?
Definitely.
Okay. What have you done over the time that you've been growing these businesses and, again, leading it to 103 people and counting so far to really double down on the feedback culture, your ability to set the standard around that and have other people follow?
You know, first of all, it depends, because there's in-house, there's people who are not inside of the office just because of their location. But to maybe generalize it, first of all, it's having a proper feedback culture where, and this kind of, again, goes back to the point before, where if there's something badly communicated, then there should be, you know, no one should be scared of getting canceled or fired or anything just because they're raising their voice and actually speaking up about a problem that has happened in the company, right? And it doesn't matter what kind of position it is, because it's all flat hierarchies for us. Just because I'm the CEO, it doesn't mean that, you know, I'm something better than someone who's in customer support, right? They're doing something different. The work that they're doing is equally as important as the work that I'm doing. So it's important that they shouldn't feel inferior to me just because I'm in charge of the company, so to say. How we are properly enforcing it is, first of all, that having weekly meetings where we, you know, discuss basic stuff, having C-level meetings, and then having feedback meetings at the end of the week every Friday, where like, okay, two meetings, one for the operational side of things, of course, and one just for like, okay, what went well, what went bad. And we also have weekly reports in Slack where we're just like, okay, this is good, this is good, this is good. We also have submissions where every employee can say, okay, you know, this is how I felt about this week. This is how I felt about this week. This is good. This is neutral. This is pretty bad. It'd be better. And, you know, if you don't know what's not working inside of your company or things that are not working smooth, then how are you supposed to improve things that are not running smooth without having the feedback, right?
Yeah, spot on again, mate. Let's go to your third point. If you're not growing, you're dying. Unpack that for us.
Yes, I think it kind of goes hand in hand with the operational side of things, because if you're not growing, you're dying, you're stagnant, and then there is a problem, an issue facing up, which doesn't even have to be internally, but it could be externally, then you're dying, right? And then your revenue chart is going down, your MRR, ARR is going down, whatever chart we're talking about. And it's the same with culture. It's imagine it like a friendship. You're talking to your friend, you know, you're meeting, having fun, going for food. Or imagine it like dating. First date, you want a second date, you want a third date, blah, blah, you get to know each other. There's no fights in the first few dates. And then after you get to meet her, you know, there's like some sides that you wish you maybe would not have uncovered, but you still have to deal with it because, you know, everyone has some kind of issues, or everyone has something that you wish you didn't have. And this is why personal development is so important, because we're all working on ourselves. And it's the same inside of a company, right? You always have to grow. You always have to educate yourself on how you can make things better, not only on the operational side of things or the leadership side of things, but also in terms of culture and how can we keep the team super tight, super connected, super inclined to work with each other, right? Can we like have a team event, for example, where we're connecting in-house and remote? Is there a way on playing games, for example, inside of the company once a week? Is there like some kind of psychologist that could come in, you know, where people could talk about the things, or some English lessons where you have a teacher or an agency come in where you put in all of the employees that are speaking English and just have them go through, you know, these weekly hours of courses, right? Because at the end of the day, it makes you not feel like a job that you're working, but it genuinely feels like friends, like community, and like family, right? So whenever we're talking about the team, inside of Slack, you can always see that everyone says family, 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 not like my colleague, because I'm not a big fan of the word colleague.
Let's focus on Jim again and the you're not growing, you're dying, personal development. What have you done over the time to be very, very deliberate around your own personal development?
Read a lot of books. Right now I'm looking at the book. It's my favorite book ever. It's Psycho-Cybernetics by Maxwell Maltz. Amazing book, because you actually get to uncover, you know, I'm not going to talk too much about it. I think it's more interesting if anyone who's listening to this is just picking up the book and reading it. It's the best book I've read in my life. So especially because it's in the space of personal development. So I cannot recommend it more to anyone. It's a great gift for people who are going through some stuff or just want to develop further. But read a lot of books, travel, discover new cultures, and, you know, everything that goes hand in hand. Discover new cultures, discover new foods, talk to new people, just experience life in different countries. I've moved I've lived in different countries all my life, starting from the point whenever I started making money. So 2020 pandemic hit, I moved to Sweden, lived in Sweden for half a year. Then 2021, moved to Mexico. And back then in 2021, because of all the things that have been going on, the borders from the US and Germany were so close. So you couldn't fly from Germany to the US directly. And at that point in time, I was still living again in Germany, at least for 3-4 months. Moved to Mexico, was getting tired of Mexico, went to the US, lived there for some time, moved to Dubai in September, stayed there for a few, moved to Bali in December, or pretty much just wanted to visit for a month, ended up staying 2.5 months and lived there this year, 6-7 months out of the year, I think, talking to people of other cultures, looking into other things that people are doing. So not only staying inside of your bubble, which is marketing for me and e-commerce, but also, you know, making sure that you have friends and people outside of the bubble that you're talking to. Because if you're only restricted to this one single thing, it's kind of getting, I wouldn't say it's getting boring, but there's like some things missing from the outside, I feel like, you know, some impulses. I think it's also important to always start learning new things, start doing things that you feel uncomfortable doing, conquering your fears. I'm super scared of heights, for example. I'm on the 15th floor right now, and I have a pretty hard time going to the edge of the balcony and looking down. I couldn't do it. However, I can go skydiving without any problems. I can go paragliding without any problems because I'm just like, I'm trying to be very rational about it. If I know I'm attached to a guy who's done 4,500 jumps, who has one wife, who has two kids that are 3 years old and 7 years old, what are the odds that he would commit suicide or would die after 4,500 jumps? Statistically speaking, of course, the likelihood of him dying would only go up if he's had 4,500 jumps without any issues. But then again, practice makes perfect, you know, and it comes with the experience. So it's all about looking outside of your bubble. It's all about doing something that you feel uncomfortable doing and just learning new skills, developing new friendships with people, and not trying to say no to everything, but being open to things. And again, be able to have a proper feedback culture as well with your friends. If there is like something that wasn't appropriate, for example, you know, it's not like we're talking about it right away. It's also not an intervention where like, okay, we have to talk, you know, but we're talking with each other, which is very important, because otherwise if he or she fucked up on something and we're not talking and like this person doesn't even realize, like, how is he or she supposed to improve if they don't know, right? And this is what's so important in teams and leadership and friendships and relationships, that you're talking about these things and making sure you're kind of ironing everything out as good as you can. But there's always going to be new things popping up, right? So it's about making sure that whenever there's something, you're ironing it out. And it's not going to be perfect. It's never going to be perfect, but you can try and make it as smooth as be. So yeah, this is what I think, this entire feedback culture thing, this is what I'm personally doing to develop further and further.
Yeah, well, feedback certainly allows for that self-development cycle to continue, doesn't it? Lots and lots of great experiences you've shared. I guess probably the one thing that stands out to me around your deliberacy around personal development is just growing businesses. That's got to be some pretty decent personal development, hasn't it?
Yeah. I feel like different stages of businesses and different levels of revenue and growth require different levels of experiences. Because back then, I didn't really used to be the CEO type of guy. Because I used to be very perfectionistic. I just wanted to plan everything out. And now I'm more like, well, done is better than perfect. Let's execute, you know, and the rest we'll figure it out later. Because I know we can even, you know, iron these things out later. So, you know, I'm still doing some CMO stuff, but right now it's more so about CEO things. And I really see myself growing and flourishing in that respective role. And like thinking 1, 2, 3 years back, I wouldn't really say that this is something that I would see myself in position-wise. But I feel like strategizing and all of these things, such as business development, are things that I'm, yeah, growing a lot and see myself having a lot of fun and actually being able to provide a lot of value to the business.
Before we move to your fourth lesson, what's given you the courage to even try all these things, put yourself in these positions and just give it a crack?
I think sometimes people tend to overcomplicate things. As I said, you know, trying to be super perfectionistic about things. And if you're not trying these things, like, how are you supposed to know if you're really good at it or not? You know, you could ask the same question about, okay, so why did you decide to go into e-commerce? Why did you decide to go into marketing? Well, first of all, the potential that you have inside of these verticals is insane. And I just thought it was interesting, right? As simple as that, honestly.
Let's talk about your fourth one. Culture is king.
I think the fourth point, culture is king, kind of combines everything that we've talked about before, the positive versus the negative aspects. Because again, if something within your culture is negative, it's not only going to reflect negatively on your team, but it's also going to reflect negatively on your performance and your output of your business. So, of course, the number one goal in every company that is not a nonprofit organization is to make profits, it's to grow. If you're not growing, you're dying. And it kind of goes hand in hand to the other three points, because if all of these things are not enforced, it's going to happen. Well, your business, your employees are not going to be happy. What happens if employees are not happy? Well, they're, you know, not going to be as productive. They're not going to be as effective. They're not going to take their job as serious as they would if they would feel they are part of something bigger, part of a family, and not just a number inside of a company, right? So this is why culture is king. If you don't have a culture, what the hell are you even doing inside of your business? Because I'm like, these are real human beings. These are not just some kind of domino stones that are there that you put into a system. If you're trying to be that person, you can go to Google, you can go to Facebook, you can go to Apple. I mean, at the end of the day, of course, everyone is replaceable because everyone is part of this one system and you're trying to streamline everything, right? But what would you feel more comfortable? Would you feel more comfortable in being this employee number 37,459 and being replaced by someone else who, you know, has the same qualifications or even better qualifications or less qualifications just because, you know, you're not performing as good and the only output that you have is measured by some kind of OKRs and KPIs? Or is it also the growth, the perspective, and everything that the business has on your end, right? So this is why culture is king.
If you were overhearing one of your employees, one of your family, let's say you like that word, so one of your family in your business talking to somebody outside of your business family about the culture of the business they're linked in, how would you like them to be talking about it? How would you like them to be explaining it and describing the culture that you're building?
Exactly like I've done it before. Whenever we always see it on their personal Instagrams, for example, right? Whenever there's something, some great success, some, you know, or Christmas presents being sent out or anything positive happening inside of the company, they're always sharing it on their Instagram. They're showcasing what they're not only, you know, things are happening or gifts or anything, but they're also sharing everything related to their work. They're always sharing it with a company logo. They're always sharing it with a company name. They're always tagging the company or the companies on Instagram. And, you know, this is like where I'm really starting to think, okay, if the employees are posting in their personal life about what they are doing in their day to day, their 9 to 5, their 40 hours a week, what they're doing with their friends and family and everyone else. And that doesn't mean that they're showing face. They're representing us, right? They're proud to be inside of this team. And, you know, once this started to happen, I really understood that because, of course, like, culture is not a thing that you're building from day one. If you're building a business, the first thing you're thinking about is definitely not culture. You're thinking about culture once you start hiring people, once you maybe have an office and once you have people go there, right? But once that happened, I really understood that culture is something that you really need to put emphasis on. Because again, like if the people do not feel well, then you're doing something wrong. And I'm 100% sure, not 99.99, I'm 100% sure that anyone who's working with me would be here instead of me, they would be saying the exact same thing about it. And I like the good thing is I can say the exact thing from retrospective. If someone would be talking about any one of my employees, and I see it all the time with my assistant, everyone says, man, she's so fast. She's working so hard. She's so dedicated. She doesn't make any mistakes. And this is exactly like, this is the perfect scenario, right? You don't want to employ someone who's making a lot of mistakes. Like mistakes happen and, you know, they can be ironed out. But let's say someone makes 80% mistakes not too good. Someone has like 5, 10, 20% mistakes once they're starting out because they're not familiar with the business, totally fine because they're getting training. And this is exactly how it should be, right? People should be showing face for your company and the work that they're doing and everything that is connected to it. And everyone who's seeing it from the outside or everyone who is communicating with them or anyone who has an intro or some kind of, you know, introduction to them, they should be saying the same thing about your employees. Because you don't want to have the word out that, man, your employees are lazy. Like, you know.
Fair point. Why is that word family and describing the culture around family or the people that are working your business as family so important? Why is that word family so important?
If we're talking about work, work is just something you do from 9 to 5, right? Family is something that does not stop. Family is something you're always part of, something that you cannot change, something that is in your bloodline, whether you like it or not. So it's this vision of being something bigger than just a company who's in business to make money and be market leader and, you know, showcase their knowledge and make their clients more money, make their clients happy and provide value. So this is like why it's all about family and why this word is so incredibly important.
Let's go to Jim's fifth lesson. Being a role model for the entire team. Tell us about that, mate. Unpack that for us.
You cannot expect people to do something that you yourself would not do, right? If you're a CEO, and I've talked about this before, if you're a CEO and I have someone in customer support, it's same. It's potato, potato. I don't care. Even if it's someone getting paid $2,000 a month in the Philippines or $1,000 a month in the Philippines or someone getting paid in Germany, $6,000, $8,000. Doesn't matter. Potato, potato. Because it's all same. It's all equal. There is no better. There is no worse. There is different positions. And of course, some, you know, I've said something different before. Some positions are more important than others just because of the impact that they have. Some roles are supporting. Some roles are, you know, money generating. Some roles are developing. Some roles are keeping things in place and keeping the system alive. So it's like everyone has some kind of importance, but all of these importances are different as per business. If you would have a car manufacturing company, for example, the people who are assembling the car are doing important work, very important work, because if you only had the engineers, it was going to build the cars, you know? And of course, if you only have the workers on the assembly line, who is going to, you know, design the car? Who is going to make sure that the car even works? Doesn't make sense. So not as equally as important in this case, probably as equally as important because otherwise the final product doesn't come to show, but you get the point. Anyways, being a role model, incredibly important because you cannot expect people to do something that you wouldn't do. Let's take the example of a team meeting or like a feedback meeting. I don't care where I'm at. I don't care if I'm at a restaurant. I don't care if I'm at a bar. If there's a team meeting, I'm going unless there's something critical happening. Doesn't matter. Every Monday, every Wednesday, every Friday, weekly team meeting, talking about what's going to happen this week, talking about what we're grateful for, talking about what was amazing last week. Wednesday, C-level meeting, talking about, you know, higher level stuff. Friday, reviewing the week, saying what's good, saying what's bad, saying what's neutral, and then going to the weekend. And if I, as a leader, am not showing up, if I am the face of the company, and if I'm not showing up to this meeting, like I'm the most important person of the company, right? Because I'm the face of the company. The people are looking up to me inside of the company. Some people apply and work for us just because they see me as a role model, just because of the things I'm doing in my life, just because of the things I'm posting on social media, and just because of things that I'm just sharing. So if I would have someone like that who's totally admiring me for something that I'm doing and not showing up to the weekly meetings or not putting in as much work as them, not working as hard as them, I'm not showing them respect. So do you get where this is going? How can I be a role model for someone if I'm not putting in as much work, as much respect, as much dedication, as much passion, if they are doing it? Because at the end of the day, I'm the person who's taking home the biggest piece of the pie, right? And they get part of the pie. But if I'm not doing anything as hard, I'm not growing, I'm dying, there's not going to be culture. People are going to, you know, not really understand what I'm doing. People are going to ask questions. People are going to ask what is happening with all the profits. And I feel like there's some importance to transparency to a certain extent, not all the way. And I feel like companies do that differently. And I know a few of my friends don't share any numbers at all. And I know that a few friends of mine share it on a weekly basis. And I know friends of mine even go as far and share the P&L. Because again, things are of different importance, their respective roles. And I mean, there's a reason why you're the founder inside of your company and people being there to support. But if I wouldn't go into the team meetings, if I wouldn't be putting in the work, if I wouldn't, you know, have my back of my team, then nothing would. One example, for example, happened 2 days ago. The client thought there was something urgent. Conversion rate was down, which is regular in marketing. Because media buying, like MarTech, it's Facebook ads, Google ads, it's not consistent. There's days where the performance is better. There's days where the performance is worse. And if you're a company doing $40 million a year, then you should most certainly know about this, especially if the only business you're running is an e-commerce brand. So the client was asking, hey, my conversion rate dropped, it tanked. Can you look into it? It's super urgent. And, you know, many times they don't treat you with, or your employees with enough respect because they think, okay, this guy, because these people don't have culture in their company. So they don't know how to talk to people. They don't know how to talk to their own team. They don't know how to talk to contractors. They don't know how to talk to agencies. They don't know how to talk to shareholders. Maybe shareholders because they're perhaps VC backed, but again, that's something else because they're getting something and benefiting a lot of it. So anyways, the team member who was in charge of this was on vacation for, I don't know how long. And anyways, he replied immediately, hey, I'm on vacation. I'll check it tomorrow. He was like, no, you check it today. It's super urgent. Anyways, he took the time out of his day, 10, 20 minutes, replied, made sure he was happy. The client didn't say thank you. I'm like, okay, so this guy said he was on a vacation. He's taking his valuable time out of his day. And then he's not even being thanked for putting in hours, even though it's his day off, you know, because he's not supposed to work if it's his day off, right? So the client, because we started to intervene, we started to message and say like, hey, like, you know, if there's something you need and it's urgent, blah, 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 you know, you need to wait your turn. Because we have a rule of like, we have a playbook where basically do's and don'ts of working together, working alongside each other. And, you know, being pushy, being rushing, this is like one of the things, for example, we do not like and do not encourage. And if a client has a certain amount of strikes, we kick them out. So anyways, we talked. And then there were like trying to tag people of the C-level and head off. And I'm just so confused, you know, because I haven't been texting with this client at all because I'm not involved in the operational side of things. So they were tagging some other people inside of the team. And I was so confused. I'm like, okay, but what are you trying to achieve by tagging this person? Because this person, like, they don't have to say more than me. And they didn't really understand that. So I was kind of shocked because the client thought, okay, I'll just tag this person. Then this guy gets shut up, you know, super weird story. But anyways, it's important, again, to be the role model, to show face, to stand up for your employees. It doesn't matter what rank they are. It doesn't matter if they're on vacation or not. What's important is that we have a good feedback culture and that you say thank you and please if you want to have something. I think it's super critical because, again, it's about empathy. It's about EQ. It's about how you say certain things. It's about how certain things come out at the end of the day. So this is why being a role model, this is why treating other people as you want to be treated is so freaking important, because otherwise the team is heading into a wrong direction and things are not going to work out the way as you want them to.
As I spoke with Jem, I felt his confidence come through. The confidence in the journey he's on and his confidence in his ability to get there. Confidence creates comfort in being vulnerable. Jem shared how he keeps growing, learning from others, and taking feedback. It's this level of vulnerability that created his leadership reflections and his ability to share his top 5 leadership lessons. These are my 3 key takeaways from my conversation with Jem. My first key takeaway: confident leaders nurture a feedback environment. Giving and receiving feedback in a positive and constructive way is important. An environment of feedback helps employees feel valued and supported in their growth. This often leads to more motivated, productive, and collaborative employees. My second key takeaway: confident leaders emphasize the importance of culture. When it comes to building a successful business, culture is critical. You want your employees to be proud advocates for the company, not detractors. celebrating success, openly sharing opinions and experiences, and supporting employees' learning and growth all help emphasize the importance of culture. My third key takeaway, confident leaders are positive role models. They understand the importance of being a role model for the entire team. They demonstrate common courtesy with please and thank you, and stand up for their employees. Through their everyday interactions, they exemplify dedication, passion, and commitment. So in summary, my three key takeaways were: confident leaders nurture a feedback environment, confident leaders emphasize the importance of culture, and confident leaders are positive role models. What were your key takeaways? Let me know at theculturofleadership.com, on YouTube, or via our socials. Thanks for joining me, and remember, the best outcome is on the other side of a genuine conversation. Thanks for listening to The Culture of Leadership. You can access the show notes at theculturofleadership.com. If you enjoy the show, please follow, rate, and give a review on your favorite podcast platform.